From Chicago, I'm Ron Lau, and this is Circumspect. Circumspect is the program where we look around at human rights issues, especially with regard to genital mutilation, or circumcision, as it is otherwise known. Today we're going to look ahead at the legal future of circumcision, look at the past of circumcision, lots more stuff. Stick with us. Gonna watch me grow. Heal me indeed. Well, there's one little boy, 9 years old, lives in my town, who will not need any healing because the courts have said he will not be circumcised. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, let me tell you what else we're going to have on deck for Circumspect Volume 1. We'll cover that Northbrook court case. We're going to hear from my own dad, Ron Lau Sr., who will give us some insight on the circumstances surrounding my circumcision in 1962. We'll have a little Howard Stern audio for you. If you don't know, Howard Stern is probably the world's leading pro-intact celebrity, and we really owe him a debt of gratitude for that, and we need to give him our support and see what else we can convince him to do for us by reaching out to him. We'll have a Q&A segment on phimosis, or phimosis, as the English physicians say, and I'll give you some info on how to be a part of Circumspect in future volumes, so stay tuned for all that. So, turning to the Northbrook legal case, here's what happened. Boy's 9 years old. Actually, this started when he was 8. And suddenly, his mother, who has divorced his father in the past, says, well, we got to get this boy circumcised because he suffered all these various plethora of infections in his intact foreskin. Turns out the divorce decree gives the father the right to review and approve any non-emergency medical treatment, and this certainly wouldn't be an emergency since she's just talking about doing it and trying to schedule it. So the father says, no, you're not going to circumcise my son. And he goes to court to get an injunction to prevent that from happening. In the court case, which was just finally settled October 24th, 2006, the judge ruled basically that the mother had presented conflicting and inconclusive evidence as to any past infections or irritations that may have been suffered by the child. This is to say, when they looked into the boy's medical records, they didn't find any evidence of infections or suffering. If he was suffering so bad, it wasn't to the extent that she would actually seek medical treatment, so how bad could it be? The judge also ruled, moreover, this court finds that the medical evidence, as provided by the testimony of expert witnesses, is inconclusive as to the medical benefits or non-benefits of circumcision as it relates to a 9-year-old child. Well, I should say the medical benefits don't exist. The medical reason for circumcision is to build the procedure. Circumcision, you may not know, removes over half the sensual nerve endings that a male would ever possess. And let's just say for now, we'll get to this in detail in other shows, but for now, it's his body, and he's the only one who should have a say in it. So the judge said further, the injury of the child as a result of an unnecessary circumcision would be irreversible. So he added that this order preventing the boy from being circumcised holds until the child turns 18. Hip, hip, hooray. This is an important legal precedent. A similar and almost identical court case was decided the same week in Sydney, Australia. So I think the tide is really turning worldwide. Even the courts are recognizing the legal value, and legal right to intactness, the value of the foreskin. If you would like to pursue the legal struggle to protect people from genital mutilation, the first place to go looking for how you can help is mgmbill.org. mgmbill.org. That's a website. If you're in the U.S., you can use that to reach out to your legislator and submit to them a copy of a bill that's basically nothing more than extending equal protection under the law. In 1996, girls were officially protected by a law in the U.S. that said there shall be no genital cutting. For some reason, that law exempted boys. There's no reason. The circumcision of a boy removes half his sensual nerve endings, and believe it or not, female circumcision, in the strict definition, is not as severe as that. It only slits or excises the clitoral hood, leaving the clitoris intact. Therefore, it's not even as severe as male circumcision. However, even a ceremonial pinprick is illegal if you do it to a girl, whereas cutting away that whole sensual body part from a boy is not only legal, it's often celebrated. So hip hip hooray for the court systems. If you want to help, go to mgmbill.org to find out what else you can do through the legal system. Our next topic for today is the past, how circumcision was treated so routinely in the past, like in 1962 when I was circumcised. So we'll hear from my father in a telephone interview about what was going on back then. How did the circumcision just happen without much fanfare? So we'll get to that in a minute after this brief message, and I mean brief, 10 seconds.
If you're circumcised, undo the damage with TLCTugger.com. Restore your sensitivity. Go to TLCTugger.com.
Well, let's go over to the interview loft, and I am very honored this evening, it's evening where I am, to welcome my father, Ron Lau. Dad, hello.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, I think I gave you a hint on your answer machine that I have what I think is exciting news. Yesterday, I went to the auditions for a reality show called Everyday Edisons. Have you ever heard about that?
I think I have.
It's on, yeah. It's on PBS.
Right.
Anyway, I guess just to ruin the ending of the story, I'm not going to be on TV.
Oh, what a bummer.
Yeah. But it was an exciting day. The thing started at 7 a.m. You're supposed to show up and line up, cattle call. And some people had been there since like 5:30, and half of them were waiting at the wrong door. So when the line started moving, there was this scramble when they realized they weren't in the right place, and they're running to be the next in line in the real line. But I didn't even get there till 9 o'clock. I spent 3 hours standing outside in the cold, and then another, I don't know how many hours. I finally got a chance to present my invention at 4:30 in the afternoon. And there was a panel of experts in the room where I presented. They included like a financial person, a patent attorney, a product, like a marketing expert, things like that. And they really gave us a good hearing. You know, it was an honor to present to these people that really knew what they were doing. And I guess what I'd like to share with you now is what my presentation sounded like for them. They gave me 2 minutes to speak.
Say what? I didn't hear that last part.
I say they gave me 2 minutes to give my spiel.
Oh, okay.
So here's what I told them. Hi, my name is Ron Lau. My invention is the Your Skin Cone for circumcised men. 80 million men in the United States have been circumcised for non-religious reasons, and there's a similar number outside the U.S. Among infants, the rate of circumcision was higher than 90% back in the 70s and is closer to 55% today, so it's dropping. Circumcision removes 50% of the sensual nerve endings and allows the exposed areas to get dried and calloused and less sensitive. Just this week in Chicago and in Sydney, two different court rulings were handed down that basically said a healthy boy could not be circumcised until he was 18 and could make the choice for himself. Now my invention, the Your Skin Cone, allows a circumcised man to roll his remaining skin forward and keep it there in that covering state 24/7, comfortably, with no adhesive. It hangs on by its novel geometry and its tacky silicone components, but it removes instantly for urination, intimacy, and bathing. Now, at that point, I handed them samples of the cone to pass around amongst themselves. And then I told them, there are already 7,000 men wearing this cone. In fact, I'm wearing one right now. It's presently selling for $15 shipped on eBay. And the 7,000 satisfied customers are becoming advocates for an infant's right to decide about the fate of his genitals for himself when he turns 18. So this product really represents the American dream, because it's able to help people right now in a way that they didn't even know was possible. And in so doing, it also helps future generations. And it may even allow me to make a living. So it's really what the American dream is all about. So what I need help from this Everyday Edison show is developing low-cost manufacturing techniques, focusing and targeting my advertising, developing models and graphics for a family-friendly sort of a display that could be used in Walmart and appear on talk shows like Oprah, and for securing wide distribution in those Walmarts and Walgreens-type stores. So please, gentlemen, give me a shot at this, and let's make the American dream happen right on television. So that was my spiel. What do you think?
Well, it sounded like a good spiel.
Anyway, so what happened was, this panel then was very impressed, and they required some extra time after my show. I was brought up to their area with a group of eight people who went as a sort of a gang, one at a time. And after my presentation, they said, hold up on the next person for a few minutes. We need to discuss something. So clearly it impacted them some way. And it turns out what they did was they unanimously greenlighted me for the next step, which was quite a feat, I think. Out of the 1,668 people there, only about 30 reached as far as I did. So I was next sent to the green room to await being filmed for the sort of presentations you would see on the first episode of such a show. These are all the things we looked at before we decided on the final 10 or whatever. And so I was all set to do that, waiting around in a room with a guy who invented a pop-up tray table that fits under your couch, and a girl who invented a word game. And I was really getting excited about my turn, and the executive producer of the show came in and pulled me out. And he said, you know, I'm sorry, it's not your night. What's happened is, whereas the producers of the show are really excited about your idea and the panel was just very enthusiastic, PBS, which is our distribution company, has sent a lawyer here today, and we run everything by them, and they said there's no way they have the might to deal with the sort of legal battles that could ensue if they go on record endorsing Intactness, you know, and a medical product. They were just too scared about the whole thing. It was too controversial for them. So, no TV debut for me here.
I'll be darned.
But I made it pretty far, and I guess if I'd spent 10 hours there and not done at least that, I'd felt like a chump. So I was proud of myself.
Well, it sounded like they were impressed with your ability. I think maybe the sensitivity of the product is maybe a little too much for them to deal with.
Yeah. So that was my exciting news, and I just thought I should share that with you as soon as possible. But I would like to talk to you about something else, because you are a witness to history, basically. You were around in 1962 when I was born and when I was circumcised. So I just wanted to ask you some questions about the way things were back then and see what you can recall.
All right.
You were born in Niles, Michigan.
Right.
Which is a sort of a semi-agricultural place at the time.
Yeah, and kind of still is.
And the nearest large city is South Bend.
Right.
Were you born in a hospital?
No, I was born at home.
And did you see a doctor regularly, or what kind of... I'm just trying to picture how close you were to what we consider, you know, modern healthcare services.
I would say it was more rural, and I think there were six children in my family. I think all six were born at home.
Mm-hmm.
And there were medical services around, but it was not a big deal one way or the other at that time.
Yeah.
And certainly not information on television or whatever. I mean, a lot of it was word of mouth or radio. That was kind of it.
Yeah. So the next question, at what age were you circumcised?
I never was circumcised.
That's okay, and that's what you told me. I just wanted to get that on record. And your dad and your older brother were also intact?
No, I think no one. I only had one brother who was older, and he was not.
Not cut?
Nope.
And do you recall anybody ever saying anything to you about your intact penis requiring any kind of special hygiene that other people didn't have to worry about?
No. You know, I think the first point where that subject ever came up was in high school. And
you were on the various sports teams, so it came up, what, like in the locker room and stuff?
No, not in the locker room, but in the hygiene class that went along with all the other subjects in high school. But it was taught by the athletic director, so it was kind of a sports sort of thing. But that's the first time I ever remember that subject ever coming up. And it was simply presented in a way of, hey, there's stuff going on down there, keep it clean, and it'll be okay.
So,
you know, that was about the extent of it.
That was in the 50s, and you were aware that not everybody in your high school class was intact the way you were.
Yeah, although not... It wasn't a subject of any concern or any interest. I mean, you know, nobody seemed to care about it one way or the other.
Sure. Now, when I told Mom that I was restoring, she said, "Oh, you'll be sorry. Your father had no end of trouble till they did his," or I don't know recall what she said, but it gave me the feeling that you were circumcised. But what was this trouble she might have been talking about?
Oh, I think not trouble, just irritation occasionally, and situation where might have been a little bit easier to keep clean in the various activities that I was doing, but no serious trouble.
Yeah, okay, and you said your older brother is intact also, and what about his three sons? Do you happen to know?
About his what?
Were Larry's sons circumcised?
You know, I have no idea.
Yeah,
I would assume yes.
Yeah, I don't think I know for sure, but I do remember once when we were little, Kelly and I were sent into the shower together, and I think we both didn't look different from each other.
No, I have no idea, but I would assume they were. It was pretty much a foregone conclusion in that era.
Yeah, yeah.
In that time frame, I mean, the around the 50s and 60s.
Sure.
I think the medical profession had kind of spread the rumor that it was more helpful than not, and it was easy and simple, and so a great majority of children at that time were, you know, males were done.
Yeah. Now, when I was growing up, we weren't exactly obsessed with modesty in our house, which is to say, I would regularly see you while we were all getting dressed in the morning. You might be stepping out of the shower or whatever. And I never noticed anything unusual about you. You know, they always say, well, let's cut him because a boy should look like his father or something. You didn't deliberately keep your skin pulled back or something, did you?
No.
Interesting. See, because I never thought about one way or the other either.
Yeah, I never thought about it one way or the other. I think only one time in my whole life did I ever see you completely nude. That, I mean, after you were an adult.
Yeah.
And that was one time when we played tennis and then took showers.
Yeah, right.
But it was not a point of interest.
Yeah, I hear you.
Let me say that. and did not have any concern one way or the other whether you were or were not circumcised.
Yeah. Now, when I was...
I fully knew that you were. Because that was, I mean, that was discussed, but only for about 10 seconds at the time that you were, and the doctor and everybody else involved felt that it was the right thing to do, and so it was done.
So religion didn't have anything to do with it, right? It was just a medical advice thing.
No.
Yeah. Now, when I was born in 1962...
Strictly a medical... Yeah. Medical sort of a thing, decision.
Right. So when I was born in 1962, fathers didn't, like, go into the delivery room or anything, right?
I think it was pretty unusual.
Yeah. And Mom told me that she carried me to the pediatrician's office, like, a week or two after I was born, and that's when the circumcision happened. So You say there was a brief discussion about whether or not that would take place, but that's really all you recall about that event.
Yeah, I would say it was done within the first 30 days.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really discussed. It was, got to take Ronnie back. He's going to be circumcised.
Right.
You know? And just something that automatically was done. It was not discussed. It was not analyzed one way or the other. It was recommended, and the recommendation was followed.
Sure. And I would say, now that I've had a chance to study an awful lot about circumcision, that my circumcision was done expertly and without complication. Do you remember any complications, like having an open wound in my diapers and that kind of thing, and anything that might have stood out in your memory?
No, nothing at all.
Yeah.
And I, as far as I know, there was no problems whatsoever.
Yeah. Okay, so as far as the periodic trouble with your foreskin, did that ever at any time make you think, well, geez, maybe I should go get circumcised?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, multiple times.
And maybe you wondered what it might have been like if you'd gone through with that, if your life would have been less hassle or something, huh?
No, I can't honestly say one way or the other. Thought several times about having it done, but by that time I was old enough that it was a significant surgery. I was convinced that it was. And so it was a decision in terms of, you know, is the risk reward and the benefit cost, you know, ratio all right or not, and never pulled the trigger to say do it.
Yeah. Here's a kind of a personal question, as if some of these others weren't. Has the subject of your normal intact genitals ever come up in a romantic situation where you had to, like, explain it away or apologize for it or any other curiosity about it?
No, I can honestly say no one ever seemed to be concerned one way or the other.
Yeah.
I mean, it was never a positive or negative. Never ever discussed, never ever brought up.
Sure. So now you know that I'm in this business of helping cut men get back some of the way they would have felt if they'd never been cut. And I also shared with you this book, The Joy of Uncircumcising, which I think you still have my copy of that book, by the way.
Right.
So has any of this affected your opinion about circumcision in general? Has it caused you to have a conversation with anybody, or?
No, not really.
Hasn't really come up in your life?
Have discussed only to the extent that you've created a business of it. I mean, a business opportunity. I don't have any strong feelings, honestly, that it is a negative or a positive to be one way or the other. I quite honestly am in nonplussed in either direction.
Sure.
And my only reaction to the whole situation is, if there is a market opportunity there and some interest that's worth exploring, then that's fine. But I'm not convinced one way or another that it's good or not good.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of on the fence.
And so presently, you know, parents can request this procedure for their infants. Do you feel like I'm going to be fighting an uphill battle if I ever... Basically, to sell my product, I have to convince people that that's a mistake, that the infant should be allowed to decide, you know, when he's of age. How do you feel about that? Should an infant be allowed to decide when he's of age?
No. I don't share that feeling. I think parents should make decisions that they think are right until a child is old enough to make their own decisions. And if that's one that parents think is right, they should make that decision. There's lots of other decisions like that are made by the parent, and right or wrong, the child suffers with them or excels with them. But quite honestly, I'm looking at your product. The product has a better market potential if the child doesn't make the decision.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at it from the cold, hard dollar and cent side of it.
Yeah, that's quite true. Although I've told my kids that no matter what, no matter how much they help me with the entering of the orders and the packing and the shipments, that they're not going to build a business that's going to be something they can inherit later, because I expect to win this. I expect to end routine circumcision and as a consequence, pretty much all circumcisions. Because I think most people, if they have their intact genitals until they're an adult, will not choose at that time to be circumcised either, kind of the way you didn't. You just never got around to it. So I think our market's going to dry up, you know, by the time my kids are old enough to be wanting to be in business.
Well, yeah, the procedure becomes more complicated though at that stage. I mean, it is a more significant undertaking than done at, you know, at birth or near birth.
But yeah, it is and it isn't, because an infant, first of all, cannot be anesthetized to the same degree that an older person can sustain, and also cannot tolerate the same level of analgesic during their recovery period. And also, cutting that infant is more of a guess, because you have no idea how large their anatomy is going to grow to later, so you can't know that you're cutting off too much or too little. Plus, any slight error you make, if you're off by a millimeter, that's a much greater percentage of the total dimension, you know, when it's an infant versus when it's older. But I agree with you that it's an undertaking an older person would never wish upon themselves if they didn't have to do it.
I have heard of several adults who have undertaken it and have had complications. I have never ever heard of an infant who has had complications. That's probably as much because infants can't speak usually by the time they're done. So they may have serious complications and serious pain, and it's never really, it never becomes obvious to anybody else. I mean, it's just, you know.
I can comment about that because
poo-pooed away.
Yeah, I see, you know, most of the headlines about this by searching the internet, and first of all, there have been a number of deaths in the last few years. There's a case where, several cases, but one notable one where an infant's penis was basically burned off because they were using an electrocautery tool to cause the wound to not bleed, and it malfunctioned and just burned his penis off, and they tried to raise that kid as a girl. He rebelled against it and finally committed suicide, I think, in his 40s. This just happened a few years ago, the suicide, I should say. I mean, there are definitely complications, and you don't often hear about them because they're sometimes the cause of death is reported as hemorrhage or infection, when it was hemorrhage from circumcision or infection from healing after a circumcision. So the complications are there. They're way underreported. But we're not debating about that. I just want to ask you, you live near Disney World, and there's a billboard on the highway that says, "Today's parents say no to circumcision," somewhere near Disney World there. Now, have you seen that?
No, I have not.
Oh. So, I was going to ask you if it's something that people you know have seen, and if it's controversial enough that maybe they've commented about it to you, or if it's ever come up. But
no, I've not seen it, and I've not heard any comments or reaction or, you know, anybody say anything about it. So, no one that I talk with or that would have mentioned anything to me has apparently seen it either.
Yeah. So you may have heard that I recently used my vacation days to go to Seattle for a symposium on basically on circumcision. Does that sound like your idea of a vacation?
Well, I lived in the Seattle area for 3 years, and so do you, but you were very young. But just going to Seattle would seem like a vacation, maybe not going to the seminar.
Oh, it was so beautiful while we were there. The weather was great. I had a hotel room that looked right out over the Space Needle. It was a great trip, and I learned an awful lot, and I was really excited about it. Anyway, so I'm really glad that I had a chance to ask you some of these questions, because you were there when some of this stuff was going on. We were learning something about just how this custom has become tradition and stayed part of our culture so long. And I just want to thank you for taking time to talk to us. I wish I had a real stinger of a punchline to end this conversation. I do hope to see you soon, because we've just had all our home movies transferred to DVD, and we're going to have a party and watch them all.
Oh, well, that would be fun. I would love to watch them.
You going to be around for your birthday up here, or where are you going to be?
No, I don't know if I'm going to get back. I'm in Michigan right now, but I'm headed back to Florida in the next few days, and I'm not sure when I'm going to get back up here. So
now, as I recall, on one of these home movies, we used to take them out and watch them once in a while. There's a shot of you, and you're like shaving in the bathroom or something when somebody's working the Super 8 camera, and you're just horsing around and having fun, and you fiddle with your drawers and flash your penis at the camera. Do you remember doing that?
Oh yeah, I remember that. That's probably my most memorable. That's probably my most memorable moment on film.
Yeah, and now that we've got it on DVD, we can freeze frame that, and we can prove to everyone that you've been intact and you're not snowing me.
Yeah, I honestly did not think the camera would continue to roll during that, but it did, so what was.
Very good. Well, I just want to thank you very much, Mr. Ron Lau, for joining us here on Circumspect, and I really appreciate your time, and have a good evening.
All right. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Circumcised? You have no idea what you're missing. Go to tlctugger.com for the pleasure you deserve. tlctugger.com.
I saw some weird crap in the news, but this is the weirdest friggin' thing ever, man. So they said in the news today, three babies died from herpes.
No, three babies haven't died. One baby has died. Two,
okay.
Three have it.
Oh, okay. One, this is what I erase what I just said. Here's what I read. One of these babies died from herpes.
And it was a set of twins.
Yeah.
One of the twins died.
So they said, well, how does a baby get herpes? Well, listen, this is nuts. This is absolutely friggin' nuts. So when a Jewish baby is born, they don't hire a doctor. They hire a guy called a moyle. He's a rabbi type who cuts off the tip of the penis, you know, the circumcision part.
Right. The
skin.
The religious ceremony.
Right. The foreskin. Now, the Jewish guys differ from doctors in that, you know, they're not doing it in a hospital under, you know, sanitized conditions all the time. They do it at your house. And it turns out,
and
Orthodox.
What do they use? I mean, in terms utensils. Of a snipping, there's a utensil they use?
Yeah. It looks like a Flowbee. No, I don't know what they use. But I'm sure it's some sort of blade or something.
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, and it's barbaric. To me, the whole thing is barbaric because the baby isn't anesthetized. You know, you're cutting off foreskin. They hold the baby down. I mean, it's just the whole thing. And also, who's to say you shouldn't have a foreskin? I mean, who knows how that happened? Who the hell knows how that all came
about?
Well,
if you're going to buy into that whole Bible thing,
right?
You got to do it, I guess.
All right, but they say, you know, for health reasons or whatever. Who knows? I know some adults who had to get circumcised because they had some problems down there, so who knows? Anyway, so it turns out in the Orthodox faith of the Jews, because they don't have just Jews, there's all kind of Jews. There's Jews light, Jews medium, and Jews dark.
Yeah, Jews heavy.
Heavy. Like coffee. Light, medium, and dark. And Jews heavy have a moyle who, after he cuts the foreskin off, with his mouth sucks the blood of the baby's wiener
with his mouth
to the homo vampire.
Like, it's just downright whacked out. Now, a lot of the moyles in today's culture use like some sort of straw device to suck the blood because
right.
They don't want to put their mouth
and
on a kid,
and it's sterile.
But these rabbi dudes who are real Orthodox, it's like written in the Bible, you got to use your mouth directly on the wiener.
And in some sects, it is mandatory.
Right.
They don't want the little plastic tube.
So they're saying it could be, you know, they haven't proved it yet, but all three of these kids were circumcised by the same dude.
And he's one of the mouth dudes.
He's one of the actual mouth dudes. Puts the mouth, you know.
And did you see him?
Oh, my God. Would you let your baby's, you know, privates near or anyone's mouth, especially that dude.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sitting there thinking now all of these little Orthodox boys are thinking, yeah, my first...
Right.
It was with a guy.
Well...
Right.
This cat's got a ZZ Top beard. Not even the ZZ Top beard from 25 years ago when they were doing I'm Just Looking for Some Tush. I'm talking about ZZ Top now. With those gray, nasty beards like Ayatollah beard. And, you know, who knows? Maybe the guy doesn't have herpes, but they don't.
Three kids.
They're going to have to look into it.
Well, how else could they possibly get it? I mean, you know.
I mean, I don't know. You don't know. You know, you can't.
Then what do they do? They're trying to do. You know, I'm sure this guy doesn't even want to be tested.
The dude might not even know he's got like a cold sore situation. He might not even know it. Who knows? You know, I mean, it's not like he's doing it on purpose.
No.
But the whole practice seems whacked out. Whacked friggin' out.
And now to think that you lost your baby.
Yeah.
That story is horrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
All this crazy stuff, man, going on. You know, that's bad. Bad news.
You always said if you had a son, you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I know. I really feel that way. I mean, it just doesn't seem right.
You wouldn't even let a doctor do it?
No, doctors, they say, are worse at it because they don't do a lot of them. And sometimes they screw up and cut off the whole wiener.
Oh, jeez.
That would be
bad. It's been known to happen.
That would be worse than dying of herpes.
Then you got to go, well, what do I do with my kid? Do I make him into a girl?
Oh, forget that.
What do I construct a vagina?
Do I raise him
or
as
what?
Raise him as a broad?
Do I raise him as a broad or as a dude? One guy, I read his story in Rolling Stone. I think they messed up his circumcision. Oh. They said he had like a piece of thread hanging there after the guy was done, and they were faced with a decision. They turned him into a girl.
Oh. And that guy, can't work.
And the guy, no. Once the dude starts shaving. So,
my rabbi was clumsy.
Anyway, so for years, he was a girl, and he knew in the back of his mind, he said, I don't feel right. I feel like there's a man trapped inside my body. And you know what? There was a man trapped inside his body. But his parents never told him he was really a man. And then he figured it out, and now I think he's married to a chick.
Yeah.
And they give him some kind of fake wiener. Something. I don't even know what that is.
Where you could really use some cloning and...
Yep. To clone the wiener.
Yeah.
You know...
He needs it.
Cloning. No. We're not quite there with the cloning, Howard. Thank you. That was Howard Stern from February 2nd, 2005, speaking out for an infant's right to intact genitals. Thank you, Howard. If you'd like to contact Howard Stern and thank him, that's sternshow@howardstern.com. STERN show@howardstern.com. Howard is on Sirius Satellite Radio. If you'd like to subscribe, go to Sirius.com, SIRIUS.com, or howardstern.com. Both websites will lead you to a way to spend your money. $100 a year or so is what it's going to cost you to hear Howard Stern every day. I subscribe. I think it's well worth it. He also has a TV channel if you have Comcast Digital Cable or some others. It's not available on satellite dish, but if you have digital cable, you can get Howard On Demand. You can learn about that at howardstern.com as well. Thank you, Howard. But unfortunately, no, we're not at the level of cloning to replace the penis or even the foreskin yet. About the best a medical person can do with regard to circumcision is leave that penis alone. Which brings us to this week's Q&A. This comes from Yahoo user Andy, and the question is, is the circumcision surgery to cure phimosis, painful? I'm going to get it done, and I'm very scared. Okay, that's the question. Here's my answer to Andy. I hope he took it to heart. Andy, you don't need circumcision to cure phimosis. You can either do about 3 months' worth of stretching exercises with steroidal ointment, or have a surgery called a dorsal slit or preputial plasty. Unlike circumcision, it removes none of your pleasure receptive capacity. What you should do is run, not walk, to a different doctor who has a foreskin for advice on how to treat your condition without amputating valuable body parts. 80% of the world does not routinely circumcise, and for good reason. The foreskin includes over half of the sensual nerve endings. For more information on conservative treatments for phimosis, go to normuk.org. That's normuk.org. They have a link on the side of their page that says basically conservative treatments for foreskin problems. You can also check out the Circumcision Information Resource Pages, or CIRP, CIRP.org. If you'd like to be a guest on Circumspect, you may reach us through TLCTugger.com. You can also phone me and leave a message or talk to me in person if I answer at 847-414-1692. That's a call to Chicago, Illinois, in case you're paying long distance charges. Well, anyway, I thank you very much for sitting with me through Circumspect Volume 1. In Circumspect Volume 2, we're going to get to our TLC Tugger Pro Intact Song and Poetry Contest winners. So stay tuned for that, and thank you for joining us.